Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. Journalist Mark Perry joins us to talk about a sensational five-page Pentagon report that was leaked to him. The so-called Red Team Report was written by senior intelligence officers at the U.S. Central Command, CENTCOM. It suggests that marginalizing Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah in Lebanon have worked against U.S. interests in the Middle East. The Red Team Report could mean that Israeli government and military officials will have a more difficult time arguing that humanitarian aid workers on the Mavi Marmara were terrorists. 9 passengers were shot and killed and 50 shot and wounded by Israeli commandos, May 31st. Israeli leaders first called the incident self-defense, later claiming that the passengers were terrorists after a video captured the Israeli commandos targeting and firing from above prior to landing on the Turkish aid vessel. The ship was one of 8 vessels trying to bring aid into Gaza to break the blockade that left hundreds of thousands without a way to rebuild homes and government buildings after Israeli airstrikes in 2009. Israel's portrayal of the aid workers on the Mavi Marmara as terrorists appears to be based on links some passengers may have had to the Hamas government in Gaza, links that retired U.S. Colonel Ann Wright said would have been made in order to deliver aid.
I met a lot of people on that boat. You know, about 400 of the 600 people that were on the boat were from Turkey. Many of them work for an international aid organization called the International Humanitarian Foundation. Despite the commentary of the Israeli government and the U.S. government that this is an organization that has been materially aiding Hamas for years, you can see that it is a large humanitarian organization that has programs all over the world, and that as lots of organizations that do work in Gaza, and there are still some that have patiently tried under the siege and quarantine to still try to do work there, that indeed any organization that's there in some way has contact with the government. There's no way you can get around it. IHH says that it does not in any way support terrorist activities by Hamas, that it has international humanitarian programs for the people of Gaza.
Ann Wright was also a passenger on one of the other ships, and she told an audience in Hartford June 30th that a passenger on the top deck of the Mavi Marmara appears to have been shot before the Israeli commandos landed on the aid ship.
At what point was live ammunition being used? There are reports from an Al Jazeera reporter who was standing up on the top deck near the wheelhouse, near the captain of the ship, that as he was up there and the helicopters were starting to come and starting to, the commandos were rappelling down on ropes onto the upper deck, that the man standing next to him all of a sudden slumped over and blood was coming out of him, that he had been shot from above. If that's true, then one can anticipate that other people that were on that upper deck saw what happened and were not pleased with it. And that may be, and this is why the investigation is important, it may be what precipitated what we saw on that video, where you saw as the commandos started coming down, that there were guys on the upper deck that took sticks, that took railings that they had broken off and started beating those Israeli commandos. That was not part of the nonviolent resistance that they had decided on in the Mavi Marmara. That was not what they had decided to do at all.
Ann Wright also going on to explain that the soldiers taken into custody only briefly were immediately released after a physician looked at their minor wounds. Mark Perry's story on the Red Team Report was published by Foreign Policy magazine. Mark Perry, welcome.
Good to be here.
I just want to quote your piece in Foreign Policy magazine. You say, quote, "While it is anathema to broach the subject of engaging militant groups like Hezbollah and Hamas in official Washington circles, to say nothing of Israel, that is exactly what a team of senior intelligence officers at U.S. Central Command, CENTCOM, has been doing." Now, this is called a Red Team Report. Why is that?
A Red Team is the group that's formed inside the military, inside of military intelligence, to provide contrary views, to provide information that isn't normally accepted as being correct, but that's meant to challenge notional concepts. And it's a useful project for the military because it makes them think, as they say, outside the box.
Your report was released shortly before the arrival of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel in Washington. Any correlation between your seeing that document, learning about this CENTCOM story, and releasing it now?
I'd had this for a while and was trying to determine the best time to write the article. But the release of my article and the arrival of Benjamin Netanyahu was purely coincidental. It just so happened that I was able to get everyone, editors and other writers, and to get commentary from the military just at the right time. But it was pretty fortunate. I don't know if it had an impact on his visit, but you're right. It was the article was published just before his arrival, so I suppose that's fortuitous.
I'm just curious, how long was the report?
The document itself is 5 single-spaced pages. The Red Team report itself, the intelligence report itself, is 5 pages long.
First, I was struck by the way CENTCOM characterized conditions in Gaza under the blockade and noted, is this a quote, the area on the verge of perpetual humanitarian collapse?
Yes.
That this condition of humanitarian collapse may be radicalizing more people, especially the young, increasing the number of potential recruits for the organization. This sounds remarkably like the security report that came out that showed how the Iraq and Afghan wars were radicalizing people during the Bush regime.
Yeah, I don't think that this is a surprise to the military. The people I talk to in the military, there's just no doubt in their mind that there's a direct relationship between politics and economic conditions. In this report, there was a direct correlation between the siege of Gaza and the radicalization of the people of Gaza. And the report implied that if you really wanted a good recruiting tool for Hamas, the one thing you could do was to continue the siege of Gaza. There's no question that that's what the military believes, and that's the result of their experience, I suppose, in Iraq and in Afghanistan and across the region.
The Obama White House continues to downplay differences with Israel and to do so in a way that continues to reinforce U.S. policy and Israeli policy.
I know that it's now publicly, especially since the visit of the Prime Minister, the White House is simply downplaying any disagreements between Israel. It says they don't exist. And that's just clearly not the case. I think on all kinds of issues, the Israeli leadership and the American leadership have real strong differences. And I think that those differences are reflected in their approach to Hamas and Hezbollah. The Red Team report is very clear, without mentioning Israel directly, that the policies that Israel is following are counterproductive. And in the cases where the Red Team report does mention it directly, it's very clear that there's real differences of opinion on what strategy to follow in the region.
Let's turn to what the report says about managing Hezbollah and Hamas. This is where the report is in direct contradiction to what Israel says about these groups, calling them, you know, terrorist organizations, and basically characterizing the situation as one in which only military operations will work.
The Israeli policy towards both groups, at least the policy that they say they're following very publicly, is to marginalize and to push aside both groups. That's the first thing. And the report says very specifically that that policy is counterproductive, that it would be much more useful to mainstream the groups, to make them a part of their own societies and eventually the peace process. The second thing I think that it's important to note is that, you know, Israel says, at least publicly, that the only thing that will work against these groups, the only thing that can be done against these groups because they are so intransigent, is the use of force, to use force against them. And the report specifically says that that is counterproductive, that if the more force you use, the more legitimacy these groups are going to have. And I think the most surprising finding to me, that the report concludes that the groups are not intransigent and incapable of change, but that they're opportunistic groups, that they're practical political movements, and that they can, as a result of this, be mainstream, that they can be brought into their own societies. In the case of Hezbollah, Hezbollah's militia can be made a part of the Lebanese army. In the case of Hamas, their security forces can be made part of the Palestinian security forces. And that following this policy would be much more useful to the United States and have a greater possibility of success than the policy we're following now of using force against them. So it's very specific in recommending what strategy should be used for Hamas and Hezbollah, and it flies in the face of everything we've heard about them.
And to Mark Perry, the Red Team, saying that if these two groups could be reconciled with Fatah and in fact made part of the Palestinian Security Service, then that would remove Israel's argument for continued settlement building. So in other words, Israel will have no more excuse for either building settlements or delaying Palestinian statehood.
Yeah, that's right. That's the conclusion of the report. You know, it's amazing to me that the report points out quite accurately that Israel's argument about expansion of settlements and the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, because they still control the borders, the air, and the sea around Gaza. You know, the Israeli argument always is that we can't leave now because it would make us vulnerable to terrorist attack. So, it's, you know, the fact that Israel is occupying the West Bank and Gaza has nothing to do, is not a fault of Israel, it's the result of terrorism. That's how cockeyed Israel's defense of itself has been. And the report takes that on, head on, and says the one way to deprive Israel of this argument is to remove this notion that these people are terrorists, and mainstream them. Bring the executive security force of Hamas into the mainstream, and what excuse would Israel have then for continued settlement building? You know, frankly, I think that this is an argument that probably Hamas would not accept. They'll say, we have good reason to be a part of the Palestinian Security Services because we're one society and we want to build one government. But, you know, Hamas leaders would likely say, listen, let's not fool ourselves. Israel is always going to find an excuse for occupying our country. And depriving them of those excuses is almost impossible. They'll come up with something.
Let's look, too, at what you have said here about East Jerusalem. Really a very touchy subject right now, because that, in fact, is where the Israelis continued to evict Palestinians and build settlements, despite what the requests were from the Obama administration and also the State Department under Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, and that building is continuing. I think, and the report notes, that Jerusalem is a flashpoint and that the Palestinian people are continually focused on the troubles in Jerusalem. I mean, the report was issued the 7th of May, but it took months to prepare. So, you know, it's been a flashpoint now for years. And rather than focusing on things that the United States would love the Palestinians to focus on, building a state, assuring Israeli security, acting nice at the negotiating table, in fact, the report notes that all of that should be pushed aside. Palestinian people are focused on what's happening in East Jerusalem. And what's happening in East Jerusalem is that they're being dispossessed of their homes and of their land again and again and again, despite this idea that somehow the Israelis have agreed to a settlement freeze. Can open the papers any day, and this is continuing. And that's at the center of the issue right now. And that's, in spite of the visit of Netanyahu and all the nice words, that is a flashpoint. I think it's going to remain a flashpoint.
And to the Israeli leadership, Benjamin Netanyahu and his foreign minister, Avigdor Lieberman, have been challenged for what many call their tin ear when it comes to these policy issues, announcing, for example, you know, laws that would further limit Palestinians' legal rights, or announcing that, for example, recently in East Jerusalem, they have plans to build a visitor center. Meanwhile, we do see on YouTube regularly these videos of either Palestinians being roughed up or shot at, or international rights workers being shot at, when they try to protest peacefully with Palestinians. It's a very ugly scene, let's say, at this wall that the Israelis have constructed. The whole thing's been very hard to watch, media choosing not to report on it so much. But just in the sense of these announcements from the Israelis, they have seemed a bit out of step, let's say, with the path that the Obama administration appeared to be on when they came to office.
The Israelis angrily and explicitly deny that there's any tie between their actions on the ground in the occupied territories and what's happening in the peace process, first, what's happening in their relationship with the United States, second, and what is happening on the ground to American soldiers in Afghanistan and Iraq. They absolutely deny that there's a line between their actions and anything else that's happening. You know, as if the Obama administration should turn away from what I think now many Americans are beginning to understand, which is that these continuing actions undermine the peace process, undermine Israel's relationship with the United States, and have an impact on American soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. So that, I mean, it was very clear during the Netanyahu visit that, in fact, and sadly, this administration is going to smile and shake hands rather than very publicly denouncing these actions.
Do you think that would have immediate and lasting impact if they were to come out and make stronger public statements?
Yeah, I think so. The truth is, no one in Israel in the policymaking establishment really wants a break with the United States or any president. And sooner or later, I think American pressure is going to have to become very public about this issue, where the Israelis just won't change their policy. You know, to think that somehow we can have a normal relationship with Israel based on sound, good, lasting strategic principles, and that they'll do the right thing as a result of that, is just a fantasy. You know, this is going to take political pressure, and it's going to have to be very public, and it's probably going to have to become pretty ugly.
What did the senior official tell you about any kind of report that may exist that runs contrary to this one, you know, directly?
It was an interesting conversation. I was talking to a senior officer at CENTCOM, and I said, if there's a red team report that provides a contrary position, then there must be somewhere a blue team report. And he was very explicit, almost ironic in his response. He said, well, there is no blue team report. There's just this, the red team report. And then he hesitated and he said, well, that's not exactly true. The blue team report is the position of the Obama administration. You know, the implication here is that, and I found this to be true on other topics in the Middle East, that what the military accepts as true on the ground and takes as second nature, policymakers in Washington find very controversial. So while there's this red team report, this really is not a minority position inside senior officers on CENTCOM or in the Special Operations Command. That Hezbollah and Hamas should be mainstreamed and that's the best policy to follow is not viewed as controversial. It's the policy they followed on the ground in Iraq when they established the Sons of Iraq. It's what they're doing in Afghanistan and attempting to turn some of the tribal leaders away from the Taliban. This is a policy that the military has followed, to attempt to mainstream what Israel and the United States and the American administration consider to be absolutely intransigent groups that can't change and won't listen to reason. The military rejects that. They just don't believe that. That's not true. And it's very clear from the Red Team report that if they were in charge of the policy would change. We would open to Hezbollah and Hamas and attempt to moderate their positions and deal with them diplomatically instead of laying siege to them, marginalizing them, and following policies that are actually counterproductive.
The Bush administration under General Dayton, where they were looking at Palestinian security services, Dayton in command saying, you know, he's trying to win over the Israelis. And in the Red Team report, you see the opposite. You know, focus should be on winning over Palestinians.
Yeah, that's right. The mission headed by General Dayton is designed to train the Palestinian security services in the West Bank. And General Dayton kind of pats himself on the back because he said that his efforts to do that have been praised by the Israelis and that he's doing it. We're training these security forces to assure the Israelis that they'll be safe from the Palestinians. That is to say, we're training Palestinian security services to provide security not for Palestinians but for Israelis. And the report does not mention explicitly General Dayton's mission, but it says that initiatives of this kind won't work. That if we're going to be training security services like the Palestinian Security Service, what should happen is we should focus on providing security for the Palestinians. That's why you have a Palestinian Security Service. You know, all of this stands to reason. It makes perfect sense. But in Washington, it's really, and especially in Israel, it's quite a controversial claim.
You're listening to Talk Nation Radio. I'm Dori Smith. Next, we asked Mark Perry to examine Israel's reason to reject what appears to be a golden opportunity to negotiate on the Gaza flotilla killings. Turkey has asked for an apology.
No, it'll be fascinating to see. This is the one issue that the Obama administration right now is the most uncomfortable with, because we have very good, strong relations with Turkey. They're a member of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization of NATO, the 13th largest economy in the world. We've always had solid strategic, military, cultural relations with the country, always very friendly. We've always viewed them as a bridge to the Muslim world. And yet, at the same time, here's Israel in much the same position, but not a member of NATO, whom we back. And the Turks have made it very clear, if they don't get an apology from Israel, they'll cut off diplomatic relations with Israel, which would be catastrophic from our point of view. I just don't know what the Obama administration is going to do because Israel's dug in its heels. They're not going to issue the apology. The situation is getting worse, and you could be sure that the Obama administration doesn't want to choose, would do anything in the world not to have to choose between, you know, friendship with Turkey and friendship with Israel. So I'm sure there are people in the administration working every minute of every day to try to paper over or solve or come up with a solution to this crisis. I don't think there's any question that the United States and Israel are moving further away in their views from the rest of the world. What the United States takes as shocking is accepted every day among European nations. And our relationship with Israel and our continuing defense of Israel has soured our relations with key European nations, of course, obviously, with key allies in the Middle East, and it just continues and continues and continues. So in following the policies that we have in attempting to marginalize and isolate groups like Hamas and Hezbollah, we've actually accomplished the opposite. We've isolated and marginalized ourselves, and isolated and marginalized ourselves even from our closest allies, who find it now puzzling that we continue to defend Israel, even in the face of, you know, clear acts like the Gaza flotilla incident, where it seems obvious that we should be condemning them, the rest of the world does, and we will not do that.
Well, the United Nations, 13 Eastern European countries, and also Turkey, have called for an independent investigation by Israel. Leaders there continuing to blame the activists.
I want to report this morning that the armada of hate and violence in support of Hamas terror organization was a premeditated and outrageous provocation.
Deputy Foreign Minister Daniel Alyan.
The organizers are well known for their ties to global jihad, Al-Qaeda, and Hamas. They have a history of arms smuggling and deadly terror.
Mark Perry, the Red Team report evidently also disagreed with what Daniel Alyan said. Evidently, your sources at CENTCOM that you spoke with about this report disagreed, and one of the senior officers that you spoke with saying, quote, putting Hezbollah, Hamas, the Muslim Brotherhood, and Al-Qaeda in the same sentence as if they're all the same is just stupid. Now, others telling you that they didn't know any intelligence officers who would agree with that.
The notion that Hamas, Hezbollah, the Muslim Brotherhood, and Al-Qaeda can be even put in the same sentence as Danny Aiello, the deputy foreign minister, put it, that they are all working together, that there's some, maybe, you know, somewhere a Politburo that coordinates their activities. That notion that Israel would have us buy, as a which they issued as a result of the Gaza flotilla incident, the Red Team explicitly denies. There is no relationship between these groups. They do not act in concert. They are not the same. And that notion, which is accepted widely, I think, here in the United States, is simply nonsense. In fact, I know from my own experiences in the region, in talking to leaders of Hezbollah and Hamas, they hate Al-Qaeda. And they view Al-Qaeda as an enemy, and Al-Qaeda views them as an enemy. Al-Qaeda is actually designated for assassination leaders of Hezbollah and Hamas for their participation in democratic elections, which Al-Qaeda views as an American Zionist conspiracy. So this notion that's being peddled by the Israelis that, you know, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Muslim Brotherhood, and Al-Qaeda are working together, are all the same group, there's no difference between them, is just nonsense, and it's absolutely explicitly denied by this Red Team CENTCOM intelligence report and by this, you know, by senior officers in the U.S. military.
Let's look at what could happen if the Obama administration were to take up the policy suggested between the lines of this Red Team report, written as we understand it to offer an alternative analysis. So the Obama administration calls for an independent investigation of the Mavi Marmara shootings. That investigation looks into the shootings, the arrests, the confiscation of materials, cameras, the massive number of ships used to board the 8 flotilla ships in international waters, that over with. They enter into negotiations of what used to be called land for peace. Israel halts settlements, and the occupation then has to be reconsidered and eventually withdrawn. Now, that's a whole lot of change. What about it? I know the Obama administration promised it. Do they have any interest in pursuing a policy that could lead there?
I think that what you've just outlined is probably the policy that needs to be followed and the one policy that will work, and it's also the least likely policy that we will follow. I think that the Obama administration has to come to the conclusion that Israel is not interested in a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. They're not interested in following through on a peace process. They're not interested in sitting down with the Palestinian leadership and sorting through their problems. Their goal, it's always been their goal, is the destruction of the Palestinian national movement. That goal has been theirs from the very beginning. They have never wavered from it through 50 years of their country's history. And we have to start fooling ourselves that somehow, you know, Israel deep down is really interested in peace. The Israeli leadership, no matter what party, Labor, Likud, Kadima, it doesn't matter. They're not interested in a two-state solution. They never have been, and that's why we've never had it. And the sooner we can come to that conclusion, I think the better off we'll be in charting a policy, an American policy, that is likely to succeed instead of the one that we're following, which cannot possibly succeed.
Do you think, Mark Perry, that it's fair to say that unless American policy and Israel policy shifts, we're looking at not only protracted war in Iraq and Afghanistan, but also potentially conflict that could be military with Iran?
Yeah, I would say that. I think that this is a very vulnerable time, a very uncertain time in the Middle East, and it's a dangerous time. I don't think that there's really a willingness on the part of anyone to go to war right now to resolve some of these problems. But it seems to me also the case that unless there's real diplomatic success in the future, unless there's real tangible actions on the part of the United States to change the political equation on the ground in the Middle East, that war is inevitable. And I do not think it's out of the question that Israel would attack Iran, with or without our permission. I think that if you're the Prime Minister of Israel and you're absolutely convinced that the Iranians are going to get a nuclear weapon, you would probably, any Israeli Prime Minister who believes that would probably follow it with an absolute commitment to protecting Israel by bombing Iran. I think it's a very dangerous time, and I agree that if things don't change, it'll get worse.
$30 billion in military aid from U.S. tax coffers is allocated for Israel for between 2009 and 2018. Just wondering, I mean, that's an awful lot of leverage. On the other hand, the Israelis are building their own weapons. They have what is now the equivalent of a Silicon Valley in Tel Aviv. Technically, they may be ahead of us in some ways. But so there is this military aid to be considered.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think it's amazing to me that we have a fully developed country, Israel, that receives the largest chunk of foreign aid of any country in the world. It's not Haiti, it's, you know, it's Israel. And it receives the largest single chunk of military aid of any other country in the world. It is, as you say, an opportunity for leverage, because while Israel does have its own defense industry, I think it would be very doubtful that they'd be able to defend themselves as adequately as they could without the United States. And you know, we don't have to make this explicit. We don't have to say we're cutting off aid to Israel. But we can do what the first Bush administration did, which is make our aid to them contingent on their actions towards the Palestinians, the peace process, and following a strategy that we want them to follow in the Middle East.
Journalist Mark Perry is a military and political analyst. He's author of 8 books, including Partners in Command, George Marshall and Dwight Eisenhower in War and Peace, and the recently released Talking to Terrorists. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program is syndicated with Pacifica Network and produced in Storrs, Connecticut. Our website is talknationradio.org. You can write to us at talknationradio@gmail.com. Our music is by Fritz Heed.